Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's a ring so epic, so powerful, it could change the world.
Must have the precious. They stole it from us. Sneaky little orbitses.
No, not that ring. The other ring. I'm John Schaefer, and today on Soundcheck, the results of our haiku challenge. Sum up The Ring, Wagner's 19-hour-long cycle of operas in just 17 syllables. Later, once you start writing haiku, you just can't stop. So here goes. Anushka Shankar, her sitar explores new ground. Flamenco, stay tuned. Yeah, I'm going to have to work on that one. But Anushka Shankar will be here, and we'll learn about her flamenco-flavored album called Traveler. All of that on Soundcheck after the news. From Hollywood to Bugs Bunny to Mordor, it's the opera that changed pop culture. This is Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer, and tomorrow, Richard Wagner's set of four operas known collectively as The Ring Cycle begins at the Metropolitan Opera. We'll summarize nearly 20 hours of inspired music and mythology in about 20 minutes, and we'll ask you to summarize it in 17 syllables. Also, Anushka Shankar, the globe-trotting sitarist and daughter of the great Ravi Shankar, joins us with a new flamenco-inspired album. We start, though, in the age of the gods, when dragons and mermaids and giants roamed the earth. It was a time when a scheming dwarf and a golden ring of power could lead to the destruction of both heaven and earth. It was Germany in 1876. That's when Richard Wagner's set of four operas, drawn on ancient Norse and Teutonic mythology, was first performed as a cycle. Since then, performances of The Ring have been big events in the music world, and with the Met cycle starting tomorrow, we thought we'd take a look at why this is such a big deal. Joining me is author and former Metropolitan Opera performance manager, Fred Plotkin. Good to see you again, Fred.
Hello, John.
Why is this such a big deal?
It's a big deal because, number one, to get four operas together, to get audiences who arrive from around the world like groupies or ring nuts, and then to have singers at the ready, healthy, mentally, physically, emotionally.
The stamina involved in this must be amazing.
It is unbelievable. And yet they're carried along by the music, as is the orchestra. It's after the fact that after 20 hours of singing this and watching this for us audience members, what we say is, gee, I want to see it again. I want to hear it again.
How many cycles have you been to
This will be my 46th complete cycle.
So you are a ring nut.
I prefer Verdi, but I am a ring nut.
So, the story draws on this ancient well of mythology, most of it Central and Northern European. Wagner wrote the story out before he ever sketched a note of the music. Is it a story you can summarize?
It is a story I can summarize, but I'll tell you that he wrote it backwards. He wrote the music forward from Rheingold to Götterdämmerung.
The first to the fourth?
Yes. He wrote Götterdämmerung, Twilight of the Gods, first, but when he had to explain who Siegfried was, he wrote the opera Siegfried. Then to explain who his aunt Brunhilde and his parents Sigmund and Sieglinde were, he had to write Die Walküre. But then who were the gods? Who was Wotan, who fathered everyone? Who was Fricka? What's the gold? Who's Alberich? What's the curse? Das Rheingold. So he wrote the story backwards, the music forward, over more than 20 years because he was living in exile. He got in trouble with the law.
He was not a nice man.
He was not a nice man. He was a terrible anti-Semite, but he was a fascinating cultural figure. Mm-hmm. And he became, and his work became what we talk about even now in terms of how we see ourselves.
Well, and the amazing thing about Wagner's Ring Cycle, the Ring of the Nibelung is the full title of the set of four operas, is how much of it is permeated into our culture. It is hard to summarize, and so I suppose our challenge to listeners to summarize this body of work, this astonishing musical achievement, in a haiku is no more or less crazy than anything else we could have done.
It's like tweeting the ring.
Tweeting the ring. So Soundcheck listeners, if you haven't already, you can leave us your summary of Wagner's Ring Cycle in haiku form on our webpage at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Or in a few minutes, you can call in at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You can see many, many ring haiku already on our webpage, too, at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Fred, let me read you a haiku, one of several sent to us by Alice, who writes, "Three maidens, a dwarf, many gods, and some fire, till the fat lady sings." 575, it's a five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables, it's a perfectly good haiku, till the fat lady sings. Is that where this expression comes from?
It's in part where it came from, but also if you saw bel canto operas in the 1830s, she ate a lot of pasta.
I missed that.
I was there. She ate a lot of pasta, so the fat lady got around.
Mm-hmm.
She had a lot of, Juditha Pasta was one of the fat ladies. She sang Norma. She was big.
Okay.
So I won't say it's only Wagnerian.
But we do have that image at the end of the Ring Cycle as the universe is collapsing. Brunhilde, who is usually a pretty hefty actress slash singer, is out there with her spear and her horns or winged helmet or whatever. So there is that kind of – that's where that stereotype
comes from. It's a stereotype, but nowadays Brunhilde dresses down more so that she can get on her horse and ride into the fire.
Here's another one from Nathan, who sent this haiku via Twitter. Voldemort, Jedi, Captain Picard, and Gandalf, all due to Wagner. Is that true? Do we hear echoes of Wagner in Hollywood, in Tolkien, etc.?
We hear musical echoes, but also dramatic echoes. Because ultimately, all of these stories, in one way or another, are old stories. Wagner didn't do Hamlet. But had he done Hamlet, it would have become The Lion King. The Lion King is Hamlet. And these stories keep coming back, which doesn't mean that someone is stealing. It means that the human condition remains the same, transmuted through generations.
So these are archetypal characters that Wagner is dealing with.
Absolutely. The imposing dad, the rebellious daughter, the cranky mother who feels that dad is playing around, the twins who get a little too intimate. We have it all.
That's just part of what's going on in the ring. And you can sort of hear musical echoes of Wagner in, for example, Star Wars and The Lord of the Rings, as in this little medley. Musical deaths. Siegfried from Wagner's Ring Cycle, Obi-Wan Kenobi from the first Star Wars movie, and Gandalf from The Lord of the Rings. And so these archetypal characters, again, Fred, that you were talking about that inhabit Wagner, they inhabit these other later epics as well.
Accompanied by music. This is what we always have to remember. When you go to a movie, you don't always think that the music is reaching chords in you and moments in your life that the words don't. In opera, we know that to be so, and we cry all the time because the music really grabs us.
My guest is Fred Plotkin, author, former performance manager at the Metropolitan Opera, and with the Met beginning their cycle of all four Wagner Ring operas, we are taking a look at the Ring. It's also the The conclusion of our week-long haiku challenge to you listeners to summarize Wagner's Ring in 17 syllables. But the thing with Wagner, Fred, is that there are so many different ways of interpreting this epic story, these archetypal characters. George Bernard Shaw saw it as a kind of socialist critique of, you know, the emerging industrial society. There are numerous other ones. You have a kind of unusual take on Wagner.
Well, I dug into my archives, and from 20 years ago almost, I wrote an op-ed for the New York Times, which I called Das Greengold, but the Times renamed it Invite Al Gore to Wagner's Ring. In effect, Al Gore had just become vice president.
They did use Das Greengold as the little subtext, though.
Oh, okay.
That's good. The little pull quote.
Good, good. But Al Gore at that time was newly vice president. He was an open, declared environmentalist. He tried to change the way we looked at the world. I see the Ring cycle, and always have, as an allegory about it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature, basically. And that every time a resource is extracted and used in a bad way, Mother Nature gets her revenge.
So the ring is made out of gold that is stolen from the Rhine River,
right,
from the Rhine Maidens.
Right.
And four operas and almost 20 hours later, it is the Rhine River that rises and
takes it back.
Yeah.
But if you think, for example, about oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, that's stealing black gold. Fracking just up the river from where we are is damaging the earth. The earth will come back in one way or another. A tsunami overtaking a nuclear reactor in Japan, that's Wagnerian. Mm. And we saw what it does to people. We saw what it does to the earth. And Wagner, throughout the cycle, has these cataclysms. And the stupid gods and stupid humans don't pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And nature keeps coming back. At the end of the cycle, Brunhilde says, alles weissisch, which means basically, now I get it.
Mm.
I have to put the gold back in the Rhine to restore the natural balance. And she does. She pays the ultimate price. She dies to do it, but the earth is reclaimed. Now, the most important thing, in some productions, and I won't spoil whether the Met one has this or not, humans arrive after everything has happened and take back the earth, and they stand there looking in amazement at the ruins and say, we now have to do better.
Mm. Well, you know, we think of Wagner, and especially of these four operas of the Ring, as big, heroic, bombastic things. But as if to prove your point, Fred, there is this wonderful bit of nature tone painting called Forest Murmurs. That's music by Wagner from The Ring of the Nibelung, his cycle of four operas. This is usually called Forest Murmurs. In fact, Fred, the forest is talking to Siegfried
Well,
here.
Especially a bird.
Yeah.
Now, again, Siegfried has just slain a dragon. He's tasted blood for the first time, and that is the tonic that allows him to understand what the birds are saying.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, it was just chatter. It's like me with my iPhone. I don't get it yet, but one day I will.
Fred Plotkin's with me and has this sort of environmental interpretation of Wagner. And, of course, one of the great things about Wagner, as with so many of the best works of art, is it is open to personal interpretation. Let me read you, Fred, another haiku that came in from Matthew from Brooklyn Holla. Nicely done, Matthew. He writes, proto-Nazi creeps, evil dwarf starts ring rolling down long hill to doom. Proto-Nazi creep. I mean, the political sort of ramifications, as we saw some 50 years later when Hitler took over and really tried to take over this music as well. This is another thorny aspect.
It is thorny. Wagner began as a socialist. He was run out of Germany for fomenting revolution. He lived for 12 years in Zurich seducing women and getting money to...
Nice work if you can get
yes,
it, huh?
To avoid being arrested. And therefore, he was not what we would call a Nazi. He was a dreadful anti-Semite. Hmm. And the anti-Semitic philosophy of the Nazis was embraced, and they used Wagner to promote that. Unfortunately, we can't link the two. I think what's very important to understand about the Ring Cycle is it's not cognizant of religion. Mm-hmm. There are Christian operas in Wagner, such as Lohengrin and Tannhäuser. There is no Christ, no Jews, nobody in the Ring Cycle.
And in fact, it's Good Friday, and many Wagner fans would be thinking usually about
Parsifal.
A very different
Parsifal.
But we're talking about The Ring. And Soundcheck listeners, we want to know if you can summarize The Ring in a haiku. 17 syllables, 575. It's been our week-long challenge. And you can call us or leave a haiku on our comments page. And it is okay to call us and read a haiku that you have previously posted on our Twitter feed or on our website. That's okay, too. The number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. See what some of your fellow listeners have posted on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Greg is on the line with us already from Bloomfield, New Jersey. Greg, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You got a haiku for us?
I do.
You just make this one up now on the spot?
I did. I was having lunch, and I was listening, and I was inspired.
All right. Let's hear the results of that inspiration.
A Valkyrie fell. Wagner blew his horn again. Goddard Dammerung.
Nicely done, Greg.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Goddard Dammerung. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It fits. Again, the number 212-433-9692, 433-WNYC. Lots and lots of haiku on our webpage already. Bill Bragan, who produces much of the live and outdoor programming at Lincoln Center, contributed a haiku, and he writes, "Never saw The Ring. Wagner always seemed too long. Is that a mistake?" What do you think, Fred?
Well, it definitely is a mistake. 20 hours fly by.
Well, this portion of Soundcheck has flown by, but when we pick up the thread in a moment, we will hear some of your Ring-inspired haiku in our Ring Haiku Challenge. This is Soundcheck. And coming up a little bit later on in the program today, sitar virtuoso Anushka Shankar joins us to talk about blending her Indian classical tradition with the sounds of flamenco. This is Soundcheck.
Shall we dance?
Yes, sir.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. So we've had a little refresher course in The Ring and Wagner's famous Ride of the Valkyries, which appears to such great effect in this Francis Ford Coppola film, Apocalypse Now, from 1979. Yesterday on Soundcheck, we also had a refresher course in the art of haiku with Bowery Poetry Club founder Bob Holman. So now it is time for us to conclude the Ring Haiku Challenge that we launched last Friday, where we asked you to summarize Wagner's nearly 20-hour magnum opus in a 17-syllable poem. And once again, author Fred Plotkin is with us here in the studio. I hope, Fred, you will help us explain some of these haiku, because they hint at a story without actually telling it. And I guess first, I will start with a haiku. Summarize The Ring in 17 syllables. What, are we crazy? So, Fred, I mean, you wrote a whole bunch of them on the subway one
bunch.
Day.
Well, I mean, this is what happens. You get all caught up in the ring, and that's what you suddenly start doing. You can't think of anything else.
So when we started this last Friday, like you did, I found myself sort of getting addicted to it. And people would send me emails, and I would respond in haiku. And people were like, dude, you got to stop this. but we are asking you, if you haven't already posted your haiku on our webpage, if you want to read it. Actually, if you have already posted and want to read it for us on the air, you can call us. The webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. The number is 212-433-9692. And we'll get to the phones in a moment. But let's start, Fred, at the ending. Robert from Reno, Nevada writes this haiku: magic gold breeds hate. They all want to rule the world. This will end in tears. Now, Mega Celeste, on the same theme, her haiku goes like this: seriously, girls, don't taunt the short nerdy guy. Let me do that again. Seriously, girls, don't taunt the short nerdy guy. It ends real badly.
Especially if he has flippers. As he does.
So this is the short, nerdy guy.
Is Albrecht. Now, what people don't know is when we call it the Ring of the Nibelung, who is the Nibelung? It's Albrecht. He's the title character. He steals the gold. The curse happens.
He puts the curse on the
ring. He puts the curse on it because he has to renounce love to have the power of the gold. And this is central to it. Does love predominate? Yes. Or does power? Power ultimately fails.
And it all does end really badly. The sounds of the final cataclysm from the end of the four operas of Wagner's Ring cycle. We set out this challenge about a week ago, summarize nearly 20 hours of incredible music and storytelling in a haiku. And many of you around the country and around the world have taken up the challenge. There are some callers on the line as well, including Pat, who's with us from Toms River, New Jersey. Pat, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello, thank you.
So did you just write a haiku on the spot, or is this one that you submitted earlier?
Actually, it was my son who I believe was on one of the other lines, because I'm a bit of a Wagnerian fanatic.
Okay.
That told me I had to write a haiku, so here I am.
All right, let's hear it.
Instant haiku. From Ring of Rhine Gold, the Norse sing to Morbius as Valhalla dies.
Okay, that's that sounds like 5, 7, and 5. That's
I want to know, is there any gold in Tom's River?
Well, I don't know.
We could do a New Jersey ring cycle.
We've got another caller from New Jersey, in fact, from Boonton, New Jersey. Tony is joining us with his effort at a Wagner ring haiku. Hi, Tony.
How are you doing?
I'm good.
Are you
a Wagner fan?
Yeah, I did some studying. I think he had an artistic antenna that I think this little thing I wrote kind of sums it up.
Okay, let's hear it.
Mortality and immortality, you cannot mix. And if you persist, then a ring of fire will exist.
Wow. Well, Tony, that is very poetic. It ain't a haiku.
No. No.
5-syllable first line, 7-syllable second line, 5-syllable third line, but very poetic.
It is indeed.
All right. Yeah. So here is a genuine haiku, which comes to us from, and I'm reading this just the way it appears on the webpage, the gods from Valhalla. The machine creaks loud, needs WD-40. We wish they had some. You want to explain that one, Fred?
Well, oil and water don't mix.
I don't think that's what he's talking about, though.
I know. They're referring to the Robert Lepage production, the Metropolitan Opera, which does make a statement. And sometimes it makes an acoustical statement as the gears grind. It's very controversial, but look, Ring productions have been controversial almost since the beginning. We go not expecting to love them or hate them. We love the Ring. But with each production, we learn something. Mm. And I go to learn. And what's fundamental in the Ring cycle, the characters learn. And the ones who learn the most, namely Brunhilde, are the ones who succeed. And if we see this as growth and learning, then we can even see something that may not be to our taste.
Well, if you want to talk about growth and learning, Scott from Washington, D.C. apparently learned something in the course of this haiku contest. Scott wrote, "There once was a dwarf from Nantucket. Oops, Wagner's not fit for haiku." Believe it or not, that is a haiku.
It is a haiku.
It's 575.
And
Scott, nicely
I was
done.
So tempted to write limericks, but
I was too.
I know.
But speaking of people who are confused, Hugh is apparently a person whose confusion has reached Olympic proportions. Hugh's attempt at a haiku is prefaced by him saying, "I may have got my rings a bit mixed up." Here it is. Synchronized swimming, javelin, fencing, sailing, nobody wins gold.
Excellent and timely.
Yep.
Because haiku refers indirectly to things in the larger world. So the London Ring Cycle is, in fact, the Olympics.
Right. Where
and
there will be.
By the way, they're doing a ring cycle in the fall in London right after the Olympics end.
Hmm. All right, back to the phones. Anna in Manhattan. Anna, you got a haiku, a ring haiku for us?
I do, actually, yes.
And
it goes, "Lass gets duped by beau, burns her family estate. Dad saw it coming."
Dad saw it coming. Well, Votan, by the end of this, is, he's a pretty silent character for the last opera and a half. But
well, actually,
he's
pretty
tragic,
too. Third opera, he doesn't even call himself Votan. He calls himself the Wanderer.
Right.
And in one of my haikus, I seem to recall, I said that he had a wandering eye, which is why Fricka threw him out of the house.
Uh-huh. Back to the phones, Bill joining us from Easton, Connecticut. And Bill has a ring haiku as well. Bill, what you got?
Hi, John. I was inspired by Apocalypse Now. Just before you played that music, this came into my head as I was driving along.
Really?
Don't
okay.
Don't worry, I've pulled over. So it's Duval's ring cycle. "I love the smell of napalm. Smells like victory."
All right. A shout out to Robert Duvall.
And if you take the beginning and the end of that, you get Duvalkery.
Very nice. Very nice, Fred. I see. I knew we had you here for a reason. Fred Plotkin, the author and former performance manager at the Met, with me in the studio as we go through some of the great ring haiku that you folks have given us. Fred, you want to help me read the next batch?
Sure.
Cynthia. These are all about, like, the Olympic proportions of the ring. Cynthia writes, "Teutonic breastplates, diaphragmatic breathing. Oh, please, shoot me now."
But then she'd miss out on 20 great hours. Carolyn from Knoxville writes, "Valhalla to Earth. Drama encircles every ethereal note." She's right.
And Sam from Rockland, "When I fell asleep, my wife took my hand and pressed. Never did I wake."
I think maybe Sam is Siegfried and his wife is Brunhilde. John from Sitka, Alaska writes, "Exquisite moments, pressed flowers in the pages of tedious half hours." So there's a rhyme here, but no reason.
Now, that's you editorializing.
Yes, sir.
But in a very poetic way. All right, John from Sitka, Alaska, nicely done. Dick from New Jersey, on the line with us with another fresh off the presses ring haiku. Hi, Dick.
How you doing? This is my take on the ring cycle.
Uh-huh.
My haiku is as follows. Wagner, that I like. Warner Brothers did it best. Just kill the wabbit.
Referring, of course, to the classic Bugs Bunny
yes.
version called What's Opera Doc?
Oh, mighty warrior of great fighting stock, Might I inquire to ask if... What's up, Doc?
I'm going to kill the rabbit.
Almighty Hunt, that will be quite a task. How will you do it? Might I inquire to ask?
I will do it with my spear and magic helmet.
Your spear and magic helmet?
Spear and magic helmet.
Magic helmet.
Magic helmet.
Magic helmet.
Yes, magic helmet. And I
well, Brett from New Orleans submitted this ring haiku. Gloomy German pens elaborate prequel to What's Opera Doc? A bit of which you're hearing in the background. And we have been talking about The Ring and what it means and how you might summarize it in a haiku. There are so many more. Go to our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck, to see haiku from critics like Alex Ross and Anne Majette, from Opera Australia, from all over the place. Fred Plotkin as well, who's been with me here in the studio. And Fred, once again, thanks so much for being with us on Soundcheck.
See you at the opera.
The Ring begins tomorrow at the Metropolitan Opera here in New York. Still to come, sitar player and composer Anushka Shankar stops by to talk about her foray into flamenco. And don't forget to check out our exclusive stream of the new cast recording from Newsies on Broadway. The album's not out till next week, but you can listen to the whole thing on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Sitar player and composer Anushka Shankar recently helped to reunite two long-lost relatives. Musical relatives, that is. Her latest album, called Traveler, explores the not-so-distant ties between Indian classical music and Spanish flamenco. The Grammy-nominated musician and daughter of the famed sitarist Ravi Shankar joins me here in the studio to talk about her most recent project. Anushka, welcome back.
Thank you.
So the idea of flamenco as a cousin, however distant, of Indian classical music is something that will take a lot of people by surprise. How did you discover this kinship?
I knew about it from when I was a child. My father actually had told me about a historical link between Indian music and flamenco when explaining Spain and Spanish culture to me when we were visiting there. And in fact, when I was about 10 years old, he did a show in partnership with his friend Yehudi Menuhin, which was, I think, in Brussels in Belgium, that was called From Sitar to Guitar. And it was this show where they had gypsies from the entire route, starting from India and into Central Asia, the Middle East, and eventually Spain, from all along the way performing through the course of one evening, so you could actually see the links. And so I'd always had that in the back of my head, and it was something I ended up becoming more and more fascinated by.
And now, you know, we have that, we have documentaries, the film
Lachmodrum, exactly. Yeah.
You know, which kind of trace the movement of people from Rajasthan in India through the Near East, Egypt, up through the Mediterranean, up into Spain and France. The idea of bringing the two traditions together now, though, having been separated and gone their different ways over the centuries, how easy a fit is it?
The thing is they're two such distinct traditions that for any similarity we did find through making the album, we easily found about 10 differences for each similarity. So in no way was making the album a discovery that we were in any way the same. It was just that the links we did find were fascinating and were very intriguing to explore musically. And so it was challenging because I really, I obviously feel very strongly about my Indian classical tradition. So when working with it, I feel like I need to be quite respectful and careful. And in this context, I was working with another tradition that I wanted to give the same amount of respect to, but without knowing enough about it. So I really had to learn a lot and kind of try to understand the two forms as best I could.
You made a good start by surrounding yourself with some incredible musicians.
It helps.
I mean, Pepe Habichuela, for at least a quarter century, has been taking his flamenco tradition and doing what you're doing, you know, looking beyond it and seeing where can I make connections. So this piece called Boy Meets Girl. This is you and Pepe.
Yeah.
From Anushka Shankar and the album called Traveler. That's called Boy Meets Girl. The boy in this case is the flamenco guitarist Pepe Habichuela. The girl is Anushka Shankar, the sitarist and composer. This is from Anushka's most recent album called Traveler. Have you been a fan of flamenco for a while?
Yeah, this record was definitely born out of love rather than any kind of research desire. For years, I was very close to a few families who were Spanish when I was growing up in India, and then started traveling to Spain for work, of course, as a touring musician. But then I started holidaying there, and I really just fell in love with Spanish culture, especially the music, but the culture in general. And my curiosity about the music just kept increasing through loving it, really.
Well, you know, there seem to be two kind of branches of flamenco. There's the Nuevo Flamenco, mm-hmm. people like Pepe Habichuela, mm-hmm. who really want to see what else mm-hmm. is out there and mm-hmm. what they can do to kind of mix and match or to find common ground. Then there are, as with any music tradition, you have your purists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you drawn to the flamenco puro, the pure stuff as well?
The stuff that seems to move me the most is generally the older flamenco, the forms like the granainas or the seguidillas. They have so much depth and a real, what I might call a spiritual quality to it, just from the soulfulness of the playing and the performance. And when making this record, I wanted to sort of choose a variety of forms, both from the Indian and from the mm-hmm. flamenco tradition, to kind of show a broad palette. So we have more kind of upbeat bulerias and tangos, and then we've also got a seguidilla, we've got a granaina, and forms that involved a little bit more.
It's funny, as you talk about it, how much it sounds like you could just swap a few words and be talking about Indian classical
Absolutely.
Music. You know, the forms, the idea that the voice is primary, mm-hmm. The importance of dance in
Absolutely.
Both traditions. Now, I know you've obviously studied music intensely during your life. Did you ever study dance?
I did.
Really?
I did. I learned mainly a style from the south of India called Bharatanatyam, which is one of the seven classical styles. My mom is from the south, so a lot of my grounding in music and then in dance as well was more in the South Indian Carnatic tradition. And so dance...
Whereas your dad is the most famous proponent of the North Indian
Absolutely.
Tradition.
Yeah.
Which is a different tradition.
Yeah.
So in this piece called Dancing in Madness, we've got that South Indian style of mm-hmm. dance represented, mm-hmm. a flamenco dancer mm-hmm. represented, and you with the North Indian sitar. The piece is called Dancing in Madness from Anushka Shankar's Traveler. The album's called Traveler. It is the latest from sitarist Anushka Shankar. Dancing in Madness combines her sitar and the sounds of two dancers. Faruko is a flamenco dancer, and Mithili Prakash is in this South Indian Bharatanatyam form.
Yes.
Which we occasionally see here in New York. You know, people come and they do the Bharatanatyam dancing, mm-hmm. and lots of hand gestures.
Hand gestures, facial gestures, foot. It's a fully physically choreographed form.
How long did you study that?
Well, I studied it for about 7 years. But I no way got near a performance level or anything like that. But I loved it very much. And I think the dance has influenced a lot of my work.
Mm-hmm.
I do think in that sense, a lot of the time.
So, I mean, having grown up, I was going to say you've grown up in two worlds, Indian and Western, but in fact you've grown up in three, mm. the North Indian, South Indian, you know, these
English
distinct...
and American, yeah. so maybe four, yeah.
Do you distinguish between English and American?
I would say they're quite distinct, yeah.
So, I mean, you really did have kind of a, well, as befits, you know, your globe-trotting dad, you had a very cosmopolitan upbringing. Where is home?
Now home is London. I moved back about 2 years ago, and up until my moving back, I felt quite vagabondy in the sense that I shared homes with my parents in India, in California. I would rent a place in London, and it was just constant moving. And I still move a lot for tour, but now I feel like I've finally found one base within all of the madness, and it's feeling like home again, which is great.
Well, and now you've got a kid there, so
yeah,
that really does make a difference.
Yeah.
I keep talking about Traveler is your most recent creative project. In fact, it's little Zubin, who is how old now?
He's one. You're so right. I haven't thought about that. I always thought it was me, but he's the Traveler. Because we made this album while he was in the belly, so to speak, and so he was already traveling all over the place at that point. And now he's been on tour. He's been to like 9 countries and 3 continents already.
Not that he's going to remember any of it.
We've got loads of pictures.
We're speaking with Anushka Shankar, who is performing tonight through Sunday night here in New York at City Winery, right across the street at 8 p.m. each night. And the most recent album is called Traveler. Speaking of family, your dad turns 92 tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
I'll be here in
New York. Mm-hmm. I'm going. I've got some shows in California starting at the end of next week. So the tour finishes by where he lives, and I'll stay back a little bit at that point.
And how is Ravi doing? Is he still performing?
He's still performing. His health is up and down. I mean, he's 92, so he's got lots of stuff that goes on with him. But it's more than him being well. It's the way he's able to transcend his illnesses and. I think it's really the music that does it. He just gets up there and just plays, and you just see the years dropping off him when he's on stage. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. You and your dad did a lot of duo performances mm-hmm. over the years. Have you done anything like that recently?
Yeah, well, I didn't get to do his shows last year because of having a baby and all of that, so I had to kind of choose some shows
that
over
old
another.
Excuse. You know?
But I did get to do a show with him in February in Bangalore in mm-hmm. India, and it was after over a year, so it felt really meaningful. It was wonderful to get to play with him again.
Well, tomorrow, Ravi Shankar, one of the most influential musicians of our time, turns 92. Please tell him we said happy birthday. I haven't seen him in a few years. But he wrote the lyrics to one of the songs mm-hmm. on this record. What is the song Krishna about?
It's about Krishna, but it's written in this sort of sweet way where the lyrics can be about a little boy Krishna in a maternal love kind of a way, or it can be about the lover Krishna in a more romantic sense. So it's more about the beauty of Krishna and the beauty of his flute and his playing and his skin and all that stuff, but it could be romantic or maternal.
So in the tradition, I mean, a lot of poetry about the god Krishna mm-hmm. is both spiritual, it's a spiritual mm-hmm. love, but then there's this overtone of a more romantic mm-hmm. love mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the song is called Krishna, the album is called Traveler. Once again, Anushka Shankar, my guest on Soundcheck.
Bonir kalo chele, montaya mar kere nile, binda bonir kalo.
The song is called Krishna. Words by Ravi Shankar, music by Anushka Shankar from her album called Traveler. Anushka, who's the vocalist here?
She's one of my favorite singers. She's a woman called Shubha Mudgal who lives in Delhi. She's one of the sort of preeminent classical and folk singers today in India. And I've wanted to work with her for a long time. And on this project especially, I wanted her on it because, as you know, most Indian female vocalists have very high, thin voices. Mm-hmm. That's what's really favored. And she's really broke through with this incredibly deep, raspy voice, which I thought would be an amazing counterpoint to the, you know, the
all
rich,
the flamenco,
deep
flamenco singers. Yeah. Again, the album Traveler is a meeting of the Indian and flamenco traditions. Anushka Shankar with me on soundcheck today, and the album you mentioned, you were doing this record while you were pregnant with Zubin, who is, I'm assuming, named after Zubin Mehta.
He is.
The former music director of the New York Philharmonic.
Yes, that's right. There's a connection there.
Yeah. Some years ago, you talked about, you know, growing up in your father's house with Uncle Yehudi and Uncle George Harrison.
Uncle Zubin.
Was an uncle?
He's an uncle, yeah. I mean, he and my father, of course, had worked together on several occasions, including with the New York Phil on my dad's second concerto. And I was scheduled to work with him and the Israel Philharmonic around the month that I suddenly found I was due to give birth. So I had to back out of that one. Blessedly, it's happening next year now. But at the time, the name, I think, helped smooth things over a little bit.
We're speaking with Anushka Shankar on Soundcheck today. Now, coming back to the kind of the Spanish tinge, more than a tinge, it's really half of the record. You worked with this producer, Javier Limon. Mm-hmm. What did he bring to the...
Oh, he brought so much. I couldn't have done this without him. It was what we spoke of earlier, where I felt like I was not just leaving my world, which I'm very familiar with and well-versed in. I was entering this whole new world that I know nothing about, or close to nothing about at the time. And he was really the grounding force where it, before the record became bigger and involved other people and other sounds, it was really about the two of us. And a lot of the first sessions were simply us listening to music, showing each other things, teaching each other things, writing together. And so he was kind of my door into the flamenco mm-hmm. world in that sense, and also in the more practical sense of him being sort of the most successful flamenco producer who's friends with all of the guys, you know, can just call them up. And so that was, you know, that was really how it all became feasible for me.
So you came to this as a fan, and he was the guy who made it possible for you to make this record.
Absolutely.
The record's called Traveler. This excerpt is co-written with Javier Limon. It's called Kanya. The song's called Kanya from the album Traveler. Anushka Shankar's musical travels in Spain with producer Javier Limon, who co-wrote the music. Sandra Carrasco is the singer. She's touring with you?
She is. She's the singer on the tour. She's an amazing vocalist. She sings all the songs from the record and more on tour, so she's able to sing Buika's songs, which are completely different from her own. She's only 29, and she sounds like this incredibly ancient...
That's amazing. That is really scary how, you know, you buy a flamenco record and you hear this, like, torn throat, you know, sounds like 50 years of whiskey and
thousands
cigarettes.
Thousands of daily cigarettes.
And it's like a fresh-faced, you know, 25-year-old kid or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's a great sound, and the album is called Traveler. Anushka Shankar performing some of this music tonight through Sunday night, 8 p.m. each evening at City Winery here in Lower Manhattan. Anushka, real pleasure to see you again. Congratulations on the new arrival, both the record and Young Zubin.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you with us on Soundcheck today. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. On our next program, 80s icons Madonna and Lionel Richie are once again atop the Billboard charts. We'll look back at the last time that happened. The last time the two of them mingled in the top five was the musically underrated year of 1986. Plus, before songwriters Suzanne Vega and Duncan Sheik head out on tour together, the two of them will join us to play live in the studio. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Greta Cohn and Katie Bishop with Marlon Bishop. They're not related, but I'm told they are considering forming a trapeze act called the Flying Bishops. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer, and we had help today from Gina Gildasis. I'm John Schaefer. Join us Monday for another Soundcheck.